you're standing in Oxbow's so-called front field, where we often grow pumpkin and other veggies, with the sounds of traffic in the background from Highway 203 reminding us of people going about their business up and down the valley. It's a good place to consider that geological forces aren't the only ones that have shaped our landscape over the years. Humans have been a part of the story of this landscape as far back as we know. Oxbow acknowledges that we are on the land of the indigenous Coast Salish peoples who have reserved treaty rights to this land, specifically the Snoqualmie Indian tribe. We thank these caretakers of this land who have lived and continue to live here since time immemorial. Coast Salish peoples, through the ages, knew intimately the many plants and animals in the region and used them to produce all their food, shelter, and their material culture in a system of seasonal gathering and preserving across the Puget Sound landscape. Using deep knowledge and technical expertise developed over thousands of years, they shaped and maintained the plant communities they depended on, especially the prairie areas that were burned regularly in order to provide a sustainable source of important staple foods like camas and bracken. When European settlers began to enter the area, they made different and more drastic changes to the landscape, changing the relationship that Coast Salish people were able to have with the land as they were moved to reservations after signing treaties. In the wake of the Point Elliott Treaty and following battles between local tribes and white settlers, retired soldiers accelerated their settlement of the valley and many changes wrought by Euro-American land use. Early farmers, such as Jeremiah Borst, transformed a vast prairie in North Bend that had been maintained and cultivated by the Snoqualmie people to European-style agriculture, and other settlers followed, farming and logging the valley's lowlands and forests. In the half-century between the 1870s and 1930s, about 75% of the valley's forest was logged, and most of the land, previously covered by thickets and forests of willow, alder, and cedar, was converted to agricultural use. Work by the University of Washington's Puget Sound River History Project indicates that only 16% of the 1870s forest cover and 19% of the historical valley wetland area remained by the early 20th century. Land survey notes from 1873 indicate that a G. Boyer had already begun farming the field where you stand at that point and had a logging camp in the hills across the present-day highway. Logging operations in the valley were likely accelerated in the 1880s, as they were in the rest of the Pacific Northwest forest land, after loggers began to replace bull teams with the Dole Beer Donkey, a steam-powered winch invented in 1881. When the agricultural potential of the valley became widely known, a number of railroad companies became interested in laying track. In 1909, the Great Northern Railroad laid tracks up the valley to the town of Cherry Valley. The town itself was in the way of the planned tracks. The Great Northern paid to have the town's buildings moved laboriously uphill to the current site of the town of Duval. A few of those buildings, including the Grange Restaurant, still stand there today. By 1916, the Milwaukee Railway had begun passenger service up the valley on what is the Snoqualmie Trail now, the walking trail you can see just on the other side of the Blackberries between you and the highway, with stops in Monroe, Duval, Stillwater, Tolt, Carnation, Fall City, Snoqualmie, and North Bend, before returning to Seattle via Cedar Falls. Almost immediately, the ascendancy of the automobile began undercutting the railway, although the Milwaukee Railroad continued passenger service until the 1960s. Starting in Monroe in 1912, the roads connecting the towns of the valley began to be paved. By 1937, they were combined to form Secondary Highway 15B, renamed Highway 203 in 1964. European Americans brought more than just railroad tracks and new methods of agriculture to the region. With all this burgeoning industry, agriculture, and travel, Europeans also brought many plants and animals with them from the Old World. Take a moment to look around you at the fields. Most of the crops we grow are not native to this region. But most of these crop plants don't spread aggressively into our natural areas, and we're grateful for their presence here and on our plates at dinner time. Nearly all the plants in the grassy meadows or cultivated fields around you now, like Timothy grass, English fescue, Himalayan blackberry, or English plantain, are European or Asian weeds or forage plants of agricultural and waste areas. These plants are well adapted to the disturbance of Euro-American agriculture, and have come to dominate such urban and agricultural spaces across the continent. Some of the plants Europeans brought spread even more aggressively and have invaded ecologically important parts of our ecosystems, changing their character and processes. Here's a trivia question that touches on both the crop plants we have brought from elsewhere to feed us, and the weedy invaders that we wish we had left where they were. What do the potatoes we grow for French fries and our ubiquitous and painful Pacific Northwest brambles have in common? The answer, a man named Luther Burbank. In the last decades of the 19th century, he was a famous as well as prolific plant breeder, philanthropist, and entrepreneur. One of his great professional goals was to bring affordable fresh fruits and vegetables to the urbanizing American populace. He bred over 800 varieties, including ornamental plants like the beloved Shasta daisy and the ever-popular russet Burbank potato, a variety which we don't tend to grow here at Oxbow, but from which are made nearly all of the millions of French fries eaten by Americans every year. Burbank was also working on breeding various berry varieties that would do well in the Pacific Northwest, in hopes of improving the nutrition of residents of the region. In 1894, he introduced a robust variety of blackberry he discovered in Armenia, dubbed the Himalayan Giant, for dramatic effect. The species indeed produces delicious berries, still prized by denizens of the Pacific Northwest, but also spread aggressively through the region by the 1940s. Today, this prickly and roving plant, which you can see all around you, is a fixture of the landscape, altering the movements of animals and humans across the landscape, suppressing the growth of new forests, trees, and changing in many other ways the ecological functioning of our lands. You can see Himalayan blackberry dotting our fields and road edges all around the region. Our conservation team and ecological restoration practitioners around the region spend countless hours every year trying to win back land from this plant to restore better habitat for land animals and for fish. European Americans haven't only influenced plant life in the valley, we've also introduced animals. Roosevelt elk, native to western Washington, were historically hunted by the Coast Salish, but in the years following European settlement, extensive hunting reduced and then eliminated these native elk from the area. In 1914, a group of hunters brought a herd of elk from Yellowstone to improve hunting in the Snoqualmie Valley, and these animals grazed and bred in the meadows and floodplain areas around the towns of Snoqualmie and North Bend. Some portion of the herd moved downstream, and these elk can be seen by the dozen in and around Meadowbrook and Carnation Farms today.